bingle bongle, dingle dangle, yickety doo, yickety da, ping pong, lippy tappy too ta.
Hello, I'm Ben.
And I'm Jenny.
And we're Playing Doctor. Playing Doctor is the podcast where we watch and discuss episodes of the hit BBC series Doctor Who. This week we'll be discussing the episode Human Nature and Family of Blood. Joining us to talk about this episode is a longtime friend of the show, Drew Stewart. Hey, Drew, welcome back.
Hey, guys. I'm really excited to be back. I really am. I'd forgotten that this was a thing that we did.
So do I sometimes, to be honest.
And then when you were just like, hey, it's your turn. I'm like, we're doing Family of Blood, right? I'm like, I remember what I picked.
Oh, okay, cool. No, and
I really like this pair of episodes.
Yeah, these are definitely on the top of the list for my Tenet episodes.
I think they're kind of a common favorite amongst fans and critics and everyone. Like, everybody loves these episodes.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to the next episode where the Doctor's not in it at all, but somehow it's the best episode of Doctor Who ever created.
Hint,
because
hint.
The show is so good. They're so good.
The show is so good that he can carry a show without even being in it.
But I like this because it's got the Doctor in it.
Yes,
it's not exactly the Doctor, but you know, I think you learn more about the Doctor as a human than you do as him as the Doctor. But that's not... That's spoilers for later.
Spoilers for this episode.
Spoilers for this episode. Don't turn it off. We're not going to spoil future episodes.
Well, I hope that they've watched the episode at this point, to be honest.
Well, I always tell people, watch the episode and then listen to us talk about it. So,
They've had 3 years to catch up, so...
Well, there's this... We assume that there's this one listener who only watches episodes when one of our episodes comes out. So he's been sitting there patiently, just like rocking in the chair going, they're going to have a new episode soon. They'll have a new episode soon.
Well, for that person, we should just stop at the cliffhanger and then not record for another month and a half.
Oh, my God, no. No.
And then episode two. No. Now, he might shoot us.
So, I will find you and I will kill you. I have a special set of skills.
Exactly.
That's all we need is for the one listener that's been waiting all this time to be the Liam Neesons. And he's just sitting there waiting patiently. But we've driven him over the edge.
He
snapped.
So he's also kind of like Michael Douglas in that Michael
Falling
Douglas
down.
Movie. Yeah, that one. I could just remember Michael Douglas is like Dilbert and
he's crazy.
You know,
here's the thing is Michael Douglas is in every Michael Douglas movie I've seen.
Crazy.
Right?
What?
It's insanity. I'm mocking you right now.
Mind blown.
Mocking you. Because you said it was like Michael Douglas in that Michael Douglas
because movie. I couldn't remember the movie, so I was like, the Michael Douglas movie.
Well, obviously he was going to be in a Michael Douglas movie.
Jesus Christ. Just move on, Ben.
All right. Well, first of all, I wanted to let everybody know that you can find this on Netflix and Hulu Plus. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't tried out Hulu Plus yet, you can follow the link in our show notes on the website. And get 2 free weeks.
Yeah.
And then that gives us a free week. So then we can watch another episode and make another episode of Playing Doctor Podcast for you.
Yeah.
Everybody's so we're happy. Helping everybody.
Help us
help
you.
Help us help you. And somebody asked if Hulu was the one with commercials. And yes, it's still the one with commercials. But that's because you get fresher episodes.
Mm-hmm. Than Netflix. And you get fewer episodes.
All right. Now, Drew, something we've started doing... since the last time you were here is we've actually started summarizing the entire episode in the beginning.
Well, that's nice.
Yes. And
that's
that way
nice for people.
So that way, if you didn't watch the episode now, we're going to sum it up for you.
So you know which one we're talking
about. Just
in
case I think sometimes we've skipped over important plot points to talk.
Oh,
about.
I'm sure we do.
On this show. Yes.
Like just skip right over.
But we'll have 30 minutes about this comic book movie I saw one time.
And peeing on people.
That was a few episodes ago. This episode begins with the Doctor and Martha barely escaping the clutches of an unseen enemy. A frantic doctor tells Martha she's the key to their escape just before the Doctor wakes up in his PJs with Martha bringing him breakfast in bed. No, Martha's dreams haven't come true. The doctor has just disguised himself as a human school teacher in an all-boys boarding school on Earth in 1913.
What?
Now they must remain in hiding from the family of blood, or all will be lost. But when the doctor's special watch gets stolen, just when Martha needs the doctor the most, love is in the air between the human doctor and the boarding school's matronly nurse.
Now that's not fair.
In the end, the family of blood learns what the true rage of a Time Lord feels like, and the doctor breaks the heart of yet another blonde, all the while ignoring Martha.
The rage of a Time Lord, is that what he calls his penis?
Oh, crap. That's
like what his... the nurse felt, not what the family of blood felt.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
People did not do that in 1913.
Yes, they did.
No, they didn't. That's why we had World War I. It was the penis emancipation war.
I just want to know if the doctor has two penises also.
No.
He has two hearts.
You just stop it right now. I couldn't stop it on the other show.
Captain Jack might have two.
They're not necessarily his. Yeah, that's the thing.
He's had more than two. But I saw that episode. Torchwood, folks, check it out, unless you're a kid. And if you're a kid, why are you listening to this podcast? So this episode was written by Paul Cornell.
Yeah, and he also wrote Father's Day.
Well, more importantly, he also wrote this story in 1995.
So he's like a hipster. He's a Doctor Who hipster.
He was into this story before it was a story.
Wow.
No, he wrote it for the New Adventures novels.
Okay.
The New Doctor Who Adventures.
So this was after it had been canceled from the BBC.
Yes, this was during the Wilderness years.
But it was before the
96 movie.
Yeah, obviously, because it's 95.
Right, and it was a story based on the Seventh Doctor. Mm-hmm. And I guess the Seventh Doctor's companion had someone she cared about die. And the doctor couldn't really grasp her human emotions of mourning, so he made himself human for 3 months.
Why does this plot sound familiar? Like, I mean, other than obviously being this, but it just seems like...
It sounds like something Data would do.
Yeah, that's...
And your emotions. Let me become human for 3 months.
So...
he got an emotion chip.
The doctor's human chip.
Yeah.
And it sounded like when he was getting the chameleon arch, he was getting something implanted. Because that was horrific.
When he's
screaming with the headset on and everything, it's like a podcast gone wrong.
So it's like the show.
Yes, most weeks. But, I mean, they'd never mentioned the chameleon arch before. The chameleon arch.
Right. I was wondering if this is like somehow related to the chameleon circuit that they use to disguise the TARDIS. That's supposed to work to disguise it in whatever setting they're in. It got stuck as a police box.
Right.
Is it the same technology basically, or is this seems more advanced?
Well, it changed him to appear for all senses and even the one heart and everything. He was human.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's a weird name for it.
The chameleon.
Because it doesn't really, I mean, sure, it disguises him from this exact enemy because, you know, it's changing his DNA so that he's no longer a Time Lord, so they can't smell him out. Mm-hmm. But for most villains, a chameleon circuit isn't going to help unless it changes how you look. But then, of course, if it changed how you look, you'd just be regenerating and then...
What's
you
the
know,
point?
You'd never know who the doctor is.
That is completely. Wait, how does this not count as a regeneration? Like, because he said it rewrites every cell of his body.
Which is what regeneration does.
Regeneration does.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it was like a quasi regeneration. So maybe Capaldi is like the 30th doctor or something.
He's already like the 14th, isn't he?
Or 13th or.
Something.
I keep losing track.
Who? Wait. Who? What, who? Doctor?
What?
Who's Capaldi? What?
Malcolm Tucker?
Wow. What are you guys even talking about?
In the
Why do I have these black marks all over my arm?
What?
Wait, what?
I'm really confused.
You won't be.
You got
or Liam Neeson listening to this episode.
What Liam Neeson's is going to kill us.
Oh, and our good friend Ben Taylor is at home now flipping a table going, you spoilery prats.
Well,
I can't sound British. Him. I can't sound British.
No, you can't. Okay.
So this, other than the science fiction element, it was a nice little period piece.
Mm-hmm. And it got that horror movie feeling into it again, which has been kind of a running theme, I think, for the past few episodes.
And the young man who played the son of mine, right?
Oh, that creepy fuck.
Yes.
Yeah. Ugh.
But he goes on to play, what's his name, on Game of Thrones? One of the Targaryen, Khaleesi's brother. The one who got the...
Oh, God.
Yeah, the crown of gold.
Oh. Oh.
Right?
No,
mind blown.
Worst.
That's, I mean, I couldn't stand him in that, but this is one of those events where you've seen it, you know, you see this episode, the person goes on to do other things, they become more famous for that thing, and you come back later and you're like, holy crap, he was in this? Mm-hmm. And so after I made that realization, from that point on, throughout the episode, I'm just, every time they would zoom in, and you couldn't see all of his hair so well.
Uh-huh.
It's...
That's boom. All you could see.
I was going to say it looks just like him, but generally...
Yeah.
You do look just like yourself.
This is like the episode of just obvious observations. Yeah, like, oh, that Michael Douglas movie.
That kid looks just... The kid in the episode looks just like the kid in Game of Thrones.
He is in Game of Thrones.
Who also played by that kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only thing we noticed was watching it. It was like, hey, that's the kid from Game of Thrones, yeah.
Well, is it...
Bran's friend. What's his face?
I haven't watched it since, like, the first season, since the guy got the gold crown. So, like, yeah.
I thought it was going to be something else when I heard it was a gold crown poured over his head. I was like, okay, this episode's going to get kind of weird. And no.
Back to peeing on people then?
Yeah. Yes.
Already. Okay.
Already. Hey, I didn't. This is Brian's fault. So just.
He started it. Yeah.
Yes.
But
no, this though, the kid went on to. The young kid that stole the watch in this episode went on to play Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah. In Nowhere Boy.
Yeah.
And he just looks like a little baby. Like, every time I see him in something,
yeah.
He looks like a little tiny baby.
Well, what's impressive is this episode is like, what, 8 years old? And yeah. He doesn't look that much older in Game of Thrones.
No.
He's probably still playing an 8-year-old in Game of Thrones also.
He's such
He's
a weird
one of those
man.
People who's just always going to play kids, like poor Gary Coleman.
Oh, God. Don't. His poor kidneys.
Well, I think the Targaryen guy like kind of got typecast as the creepy fuck who probably screws his entire family.
Look at him.
Well, I was going to say, this episode pretty much nailed it for, hey, we need a real creepy fuck for Game of Thrones. Oh, there's that kid from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And it needs to be someone who has experience with incest.
Yeah.
Bing.
That guy. Got the perfect guy.
Oh, sister of mine. Whoa. This is horrifying.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
That whole family just creeped me the fuck out. Like, and not even, like, in the good, scary horror movie kind of way. Like, they're creepy perverts.
Love your family, but don't love your family. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, this was set in, what was it, November 11th, 1913? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. We were talking about it before the show that this was not Veterans Day or Armistice Day. Because
not yet.
It's November 11th, but it's before World War I,
mm-hmm.
huh. So there was no armistice yet, because that didn't happen until
18. I had to just look it up. Like, I didn't.
And, Jesus, so much for Remembrance Day. But, that was the thing that, I don't know if they did that intentionally.
I'm sure they did.
In the original novel... It was set on in April.
Okay, but it was just before the war also.
Right, because the war started in June of 1914. And this was in November of 1913. The novel was April of 1914.
Mm-hmm.
So you still had some time.
Yes.
And the other thing, though, with this being set in 1913, it's kind of funny because previously, when the Doctor took Martha to Shakespeare times, mm-hmm. she was concerned about race.
So like medieval times?
No, Shakespeare times. Elizabethan London.
Okay.
With, I can't even say what I wanted to say about that. So she was concerned about, though, skin color.
Yeah.
And possibly being some kind of racial problem.
Specifically.
Yes. And the Doctor just was like, no, what? No problem.
No big deal.
Well, it was a big deal in 1913 England.
Apparently. Apparently people got more racist as time went on.
I mean, it's nice that they didn't, like, ignore it, but geez. Like, the comment about, like, how can you tell whether or not your hands are dirty? Oh, sick burn. And then they run away. And she's like, what?
Yeah. Like, it seemed almost unnecessary, but I...
Well, at the same time, though, 1913 was a pretty racist time. So, I mean,
1913, it was a racist year.
I see, and I can't follow. It was my favorite year. No.
I think that was probably the only thing I didn't really care for in this entire episode was how, like, the way that they tried to set the year and set the feeling of the year sometimes felt like really heavy-handed. Like it was, you know, the whole thing about it being on November 11th. To me, that felt like so painfully obvious that they were trying to foreshadow the war. You know, they've got flash forwards to the war,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they were happening like all the freaking time. And they would say like, oh, a war is coming and blah, 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 you know, not winter is coming, but war is coming.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of things. I don't know. Maybe they did talk like that then. Like they knew something like this was going to come, but it did seem really kind of like, you know, people who know history will get this joke. And
it's like, oh. Well, I mean, to be fair though, the only one I really heard about that was really big on war is coming would be Martha, who knows for a fact war is coming, and then the kid. Who is, mm-hmm. you know, partially psychic or whatever.
Right. There were a couple other little comments here and there. I mean, it may have been from the Doctor. I can't remember who said it, but they were saying it like, you know, every chance they got.
I mean, it was crazy that you got this, you know, this boarding school and they've got a machine gun out front for practice. I mean, I went to the wrong school. I mean, this is like, hey, if you can't really go to Hogwarts.
Boys' school?
Well, if you can't go to Hogwarts, you'll want to go here because at least they, you know, you don't get a magic wand, but you get a, you know, Maxim gun and just.
Okay, well, I don't know history of early 20th century England,
mm-hmm.
but I would assume that these are all very well off and these were boys that were going to school that were basically training to go into the military. Like it's West Point or something almost.
No.
Hmm.
But I think it would be a prep school for West Point, possibly.
Either way. I mean, yeah. it was
Or it's just the expectation that if you're of a certain caliber of society, you would go to the military
right.
after prep school. So this is to prepare them since, again, you're upper crust. You're not mm-hmm. going to be an enlisted guy.
Well, yeah.
You're going to be an officer.
They're going to go straight to officer.
Right.
Know.
So this would kind of prep them for that.
Which is yeah. it's kind of like the opposite of America where, or at least in like the 60s and stuff, if you were rich, you got out of going to war.
Right, right, right.
They're all rich and they're just like, let's do it. Yeah.
Well, see, this is when, though, you know, England was still, you know, gung-ho for the, you know, well, for the king in this time frame. And, you know, for king and country and all that was still like a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
They've just finished the Boer War. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the headmaster was actually a veteran. And that was the thing is, well, you still had veterans of these near wars, but we hadn't gotten to the bloody horror of the Great War yet.
The bloody what now?
Horror.
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 Horror. Okay. Sorry.
It's not that time of the month, is it? Ah! Don't try to...
What? What, bitch? What?
Okay. Anyway, though.
Moving on.
So another person in this episode, Jessica Hines, who plays Joan Redfern,
mm-hmm.
which I kept thinking was a very Native American sounding name.
It
Redfern.
Was, yeah.
I kind of, you know, Redhorn, Red. I don't know. But
she has to kill her own dogs? That's what that book's about, right?
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yes.
Where the Joan Redfern grows.
Because she also gained some weight in that book. Yeah. Well, because the Joan Redfern grows.
Oh,
God. Oh.
Boo.
You are a dad. There's sometimes I forget that, but then you say things like this.
Well, people who follow my Twitter stream know this for a fact.
And people that live with him know really well.
I love the dad jokes. I got it. All right.
Yes.
But no, Jessica Hines has been in a show with another guest star of Doctor Who, Simon Pegg.
In space.
They co-founded Space together. Which is a very funny show if you're into that kind of thing.
Is that still on Netflix also?
I do not know. I haven't looked for it in a while. After I watched all the episodes, I...
Because I never get to finish watching it.
Uh-huh.
I think it's still there. It's so good.
It is very good.
Well, the problem is that there's so many good shows out there that...
Yeah. No. Put them all to the side.
Put them all to the side and watch
Spaced
that?
Spaced is worth it.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Because it's funny because they actually... Simon Pegg and Jessica Hines had met up again after Spaced in Shaun of the Dead.
It's not on Netflix anymore, no.
Oh, gasp.
Sad face.
So we need to, whatever it is that people do to make things come back to Netflix, start recording.
Petition.
No, the better way is to search for it. The more people who search for something, the more tempted.
Good news. Uh-huh. It's on Hulu, and if you sign up using your promo code, they can get 2 free weeks.
And 2 weeks is almost enough to watch all of that if you binge watch it.
If I actually try.
There you go. The next time a listener signs up for the free trial,
then I can watch
using
this.
Our promo code, then you have an opportunity to try to binge watch as much of it as possible.
There's only 14 episodes. It's really easy.
Yeah. So that's like an episode a day. I can do that.
Well, it's like we've spent a Saturday and watched all of Firefly,
which
is 14 episodes.
Okay,
and
but
those
I'm not
are hour-long episodes,
right?
Yeah. I'm not binge watching anymore. I can't. I just can't do that with my life.
Getting too old for that shit.
Okay.
3 days from retirement. Anyway,
you're killing me.
Yes, Spaced. It's on Hulu. Watch it,
please.
It's really good. From what I saw.
Yes.
So, yeah,
well, it's Simon Pegg's, some of his best stuff. And like I said, they also appear together in...
I don't know about best.
Like, it's some of.
Okay. All right.
That is a very broad statement that could mean a lot of things are better or maybe not. It's just this is some of his better work.
Anyway, I really liked this episode.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Especially...
Doctor Who.
This Doctor Who episode that we're talking about here.
Oh, it's like we talked about last week. It's very hard to discuss the good episodes without getting distracted because it's like you can't really rag on it too much.
Yeah.
Because this is one of my more favorite shows. Episodes.
Well, this is the kind of episode that I always kind of, again, forgot like how good it was. And this was one that for some reason I didn't really... think about. Like, I don't go back and watch it very often.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I thought of it as one of the ones that I didn't like. So...
Yeah, and when I picked it, it was because I remember I remember his rage, which sounds, now that we've got that unfortunate connotation to it, I remember the doctor's rage and how big it was.
Throbbing rage.
A quiet rage.
All over
but I remember,
face.
Like, getting chills at that little speech.
Yes.
So I based this entire pick on that one little speech of, you know, he never raised his voice.
It was that. That was the part that I think... just nailed the episode for me. I mean, I enjoyed it throughout, but then that little speech just is so, like you said, goosebumps. It just, the first time I watched it, it just you're just drawn in. And you're like, holy crap.
And because you understand, like, you know, the doctor has all this power, but he doesn't want to use it. And that's what makes him so special, is that he goes out of his way and, you know, puts himself under all this pain for 3 months just so that they can die off naturally, so that he doesn't have to torture them, to punish them. And
right.
It's really great and shows why Doctor Who is an important show, or at least was. I
felt like he went a little bit overboard personally. I mean, he definitely, you know, treats many of his enemies with no mercy. Mm-hmm. But this family in particular, I felt like because of how much they damaged the town and his personal feelings towards Joan Redfern and all the other things that went on, I felt like he was just like, hey, you know what? You fuck with me, I'm going to fuck with you now. You know what?
Messed with the bull, you get the horns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was definitely, to me, it was way over the top compared to...
Well, I think sometimes, though, it's almost like a Sun Tzu level, where word of this is going to get out to the other bad guys out. Because, and then that, you know, there's later episodes.
Push him to the edge. You can push him. You can push him. But if you push him to the edge, he will fuck you over.
Well, and I think, and again, this is like any like superpowered individual. There's an old episode of
angry.
Well, no, there's an old episode of, I think it was Justice League, where Superman fighting Darkseid. Uh-huh. And when he's, you know, fighting him, and Darkseid's winning for a little while, and then he starts fighting back and, you know, gets back up. Superman's like, I want to thank you for letting me, you know, it's like I walk around in a world made out of cardboard, and I have to always be careful so that I don't hurt or damage anything, but I can unleash on you.
Mm-hmm.
And show, you know, and so he actually had an equal fight at that point.
Right.
And so the doctor sometimes has to unleash. And when he does, that allows the word to get around. And so that goes back out to the Cybermen and back to the Sontarans. And it's like,
yeah, but
do
this,
you really want
to... His family wasn't equal to him.
Well, but sometimes, you know, it's like when you're the fastest gun in the West.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes...
You got to murder people to keep that name up.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that kid, that 12-year-old kid, gets his dad's gun and comes out and draws on you. And you got to put him down. And now you got a bad rep, but people know, well, he'll kill a 12-year-old.
This is part of the legend of the Doctor.
Well, this is why in later episodes, when he can stand up and make speeches and just scare people off with a speech.
Hey, you remember all this shit I did?
They're not just words.
Yeah, he can back up his threats. And even his threats are just like, he's not going, oh, I'm going to kick your ass. It's just... Hey, I need you to look in your little computers and think back, look at the history files, and see what happened on your darkest day.
Mm-hmm.
And then think about who caused that darkest day. Oh, yeah, that's me. Hi, the Doctor.
I think the creepiest
then
one
he drops
was
the
mic. He didn't drop the mic. The girl in the mirror.
Yeah.
Was the creepiest shit, because everybody has had that moment where you look in the mirror and you think you see something.
Something moved just in the corner of your eye. And it could be a shadow. It could be, you know, the towel wasn't where it was supposed to be, something. Mm-hmm. But something moved. And you have to look back. Ever since this episode, I've known it was her. And that's creepy, especially when you're going to the bathroom and the mirror is right across there. And you're like, ah! And so then it's almost like you're like putting...
You're going to cover all the mirrors in your house?
I do. It's like I'm sitting Shiva. I cover up the mirrors and...
Right over my head.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Oh.
Anyways.
I got it.
Thank
I particularly
you.
Liked the whole... I mean, just the whole thing of the Doctor turning into human.
Mm-hmm.
The watch, I thought, was really clever. Like, he kind of put himself into the watch.
Mm-hmm.
I really like seeing the struggle between the Doctor that was kind of hidden within him and the John Smith character. Like, little pieces of the Doctor would slip out every now and then, and he didn't even think about it. It was just like, you know, the safeties weren't all the way on or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, where did you learn to draw, Gallifrey? What, was that in Ireland? What?
Well, that's like the running joke is whenever they don't want somebody to know, you know, that Gallifrey's a planet, it's near Ireland.
Okay. Was this used before that?
Yes.
Okay. Oh,
back in the classic series that...
Oh, that's near really Ireland. Clever then.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, just like when somebody says, oh, he's the Doctor. Doctor who? Ha, ha, ha. Where's Gallifrey? I think it's near Ireland.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it just has that name, that sound, mm-hmm, that you would kind of think of. But yeah.
I also like the Doctor as human. And because it shows the difference between Time Lords and us. And, mm-hmm, and especially when he learns about the Doctor and how afraid he is of having that much power and that much responsibility. You learn a lot about the Doctor when he's not the Doctor, just from him being different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about it while I was watching this. I'm pretty sure this is the only time I've ever seen David Tennant play a human. Now, I've not seen him in very many things, but...
Oh, okay.
So you haven't seen, like, Hamlet or any of the other things that he's been in? No, did you see the Harry Potter series?
Right.
Well, he's a
wizard, which
it's a human, kind of human, but not exactly more human than human. I don't know.
Oh, Jesus.
And my thing is, I think this really let David Tennant though stretch his acting muscles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
not just be that goofy guy. Look at him bounce around. I was kind of disappointed when he started talking like the Doctor. I was just like, oh yeah, he does do that.
Yeah.
Talks really fast, talks about the Fergen.
No, but it's just the emotional range that he had when, you know, like you were saying, when he didn't want to die. Because basically this is the Doctor killing John Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And John Smith has to decide, yes, I will die now so that the Doctor can live again.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just, I mean, you really felt that pain.
Yeah, especially when he kind of said goodbye to Joan right at the end and kind of they held the watch together and they watched their entire lives pass before them, like, you know, having kids and the grandkids and marriage. It was painful to watch.
Yeah.
But it was weird because it was like that really bittersweet, you know, like,
oh, they were happy at another timeline.
Right. But then it was just basically a dream that happened in 2 seconds and now it's over. And I couldn't figure out if that was like really cruel of him or if that was kind of like, if he even did it intentionally, mm-hmm, or if it just happened.
It's a byproduct of the watch.
Right.
Right. I honestly don't know. I think though that might be something that the watch did since his persona was still in there.
Mm-hmm.
That he gave to her and to John Smith so that they could have a little bit of that. Well, you said it was bittersweet, but at least have something sweet to, mm-hmm, think about of that life together. It's almost like the Star Trek episode with the Inner Light.
Oh, the Inner Light, yeah.
Where you live that and you see that entire lifetime lived, mm-hmm, in the spans of minutes. Well, this, they got their entire life together in a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
It doesn't sit right with me because if he didn't become the Doctor again,
mm-hmm,
and which would mean that in that timeline, the Family of Blood either die or they become Time Lords themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, the Earth is destroyed like 400 times over before, mm-hmm, David Tennant grows old enough to die because the Doctor's saving the planet every few seconds. So,
right. So that would have to be
died of old age.
No,
the Skrillarax or whoever the
Skrillex.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Deadmau5. They would come and they'd blow up the whole planet.
Yeah, totally.
So basically, every time that we watch this show now, from this point on, and the Doctor saves Earth, that's a point where he didn't save the Earth because he was married to some lady back in 1913.
Yes.
But it has to be set after, say, about the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Because then he would have died. And so it's like he doesn't care.
Right. We're all dead. Twisted in like so many timey-wimey knots right now. I can't even deal. Now,
one of the things that I wanted to, and it's in the scene just before the doctor has his little John Smith has his meltdown about not wanting to die. But when Latimer comes in and they're talking about why he was scared of the doctor, but then he wasn't, that one quote that they've used over and over where Latimer said, he's like fire and ice and rage. He's like the night and the storm and the heart of the sun. He's ancient and forever. He burns at the center of time and can see through and see the turn of the universe, and he's wonderful. And I think that, I mean, that covers the rage of the Time Lord. Mm-hmm. That covers, I mean, all the things that make us love the Doctor summed up in that, you know, those words. And it was just this crazy, and the kid probably knows more about the Doctor than most people get to.
Little Timmy.
Oh, little Timmy Latimer, where have you been, lad? Have you been off to the boarding school? Have you met any interesting professors?
Oh, I going off to war, I am.
Oh, my God.
What the heck?
Oh, little Timmy. That's a nice pocket watch you got there. Did you steal it from some Irishman?
Of course he did. Of course. He's a plucky little English schoolboy.
Yes. Talking about English schoolboys, though, real quick.
Okay.
Now it's getting creepy again.
Feel my rage of the Time Lord. The what's his son of mine?
Yeah.
Who goes on to play Tangerine on
Game of Thrones.
Crown Boy. Before he was turned to the family of blood, when he's going out into the woods to get the beer.
Still creepy, yes.
Derpy as hell, though. Because you've got the spaceship crash report, or the lights are shining and stuff, and he just has that...
Oh, Pip-Pip Cheerio.
What's this, then?
What?
Let me not... My goodness, this is a... What?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just... You were talking about how British Black Orchid was.
This is right up there.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole boys boarding school and the father, he had that like classic tubby English guy look. You know, he was just, he's got the handlebar mustache and he's got like the suit and like the big gut with the little tiny legs.
The vest.
And, you know, like he's a little penguin or something. I don't know. It's really.
Danny DeVito?
Yes.
You said penguin and that was all I could think of. I need to start smoking. And then, of course, you have the scarecrows. The scarecrows made me want this to be a Halloween episode. This episode came out in May, late May and early June, the two episodes. But they always do that where you have that episode around May or June that you would think maybe it gets rerun and it's on Halloween or something.
But this whole season has had, like, kind of an undercurrent of horror movies.
Because
we had
going to keep going.
Yes. We had the Shakespeare with the witches.
Yeah.
I mean, the 42 kind of had a horror movie sort of feel to it, even though it wasn't like a, you know, didn't have creatures or something.
Yeah. Well, it had, the sun guy.
Well, yeah, technically. So.
So this is the Halloween season.
It is. It's Halloween.
It is the Halloween of our discontent. No. Okay. I tried.
Try harder.
But the scarecrows for me, and I love though in the ending how they bring the scarecrows back into it with turning son of mine into a scarecrow to watch over the fields of England for all time.
Yeah, and that part when he like walks down the yellow brick road, it's Dorothy. That's
how he redeemed himself.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So we get his brain
and
back.
And they gave him a brain back, and he became human again. And then he went to Westeros and got expelled. And so then he was with his sister. And then he lost his brain again because of the Golden Crown.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All this little the hidden Easter eggs all provided by the Playing Doctor podcast.
All television and movies are in the same continuity if you just know how to work it
You just have to know how to bullshit enough.
Or
I feel bad for whatever farmer like goes to that field, like where did that scarecrow come from, and like tries to move it, and it's some, you know, frozen alien.
Well, I think I'm thinking the doctor probably did some kind of doctory thing to it.
Doctory thing.
So that you don't ever mess with that scarecrow.
Oh yeah, kind of like how he put on the watch that he never really noticed the.
Right, I mean, like the most important thing he owns at that point, and he's completely forgotten about it. He'll pick it up occasionally, but then when it gets stolen, he had no.
He uses somebody else's problem field around it.
He mentioned something like that. Yeah,
He did have the perception field, but
just different universe called a different thing.
Yeah,
so.
Else's problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'd forgotten about the scarecrows, so when they came up, I was like, oh yeah, we have to have a cheap monster to throw around because it's Doctor Who.
And well, you know? Since you have kids on the machine guns, you can't really have 12-year-olds mowing down soldiers of some kind, because that's going to probably have like parents.
Aliens. Yeah.
And they're not human. They're just, ooh, it's a scarecrow.
And did we ever catch, did all of the kids survive
this encounter?
Yes.
I don't think any children got killed. The headmaster, the teacher, the guy down in town at the pub, the
sister
veteran.
Of mine and son of mine, technically.
I was going to say, technically, that they did die.
Well, no.
No,
because... Oh, okay, yeah, the person that they absorbed, yes, because Jenny said... Jenny said that...
Jenny...
were killed, she was gone.
Why didn't that girl ever get rid of the fucking balloon? Like, she had to carry the thing around the entire time.
I think there's some residual stuff from the person.
Like, they just couldn't get rid of it. But I would think at some point it's going to lose its helium.
Yeah, that was my thing. Like, shouldn't it be, like, deflated by now?
You would think so.
Well, maybe it's, like,
cold England air.
Well, when she absorbed the kid... and, like, takes the form of the child, she absorbs into the balloon. So the whole package is...
That's not how it happens. That's not how these creatures work.
Okay.
There are future creatures that do that.
Well, then maybe it's like an Absorbaloff, except different.
Except not horrible and disgusting. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, I could only figure that she, like, got the balloon from her favorite evil clown and... She was just like, I love that clown.
Well, even though this was
they float. They all float down here.
Oh, God. Let's leave it alone.
Oh, God. Just when I thought I was just killing.
You set it up.
I was killing the show just to see how, just so you can see how it feels.
Uh-huh.
Just killing it. And you're like, I can kill it.
Well, see, sometimes people listen to the show and they count my jokes as Easter eggs. And speaking of Easter eggs, this episode was full of them.
It's full of something.
Well, this was the first time. I mean, we had the Journal of Impossible Things. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time that we really get a confirmation that New Who is yes, part of all of Doctor Who. Because there were still some debates of, oh, well, that's not canon.
Is it a reboot?
This isn't canon. Oh, well, they're not going to count the Eighth Doctor because he was the American Doctor. And right there, you've got McCain.
What?
John McCain shows up, his little non-bendy arms getting all angry, and he has a stroke. No, that didn't happen. But Paul McGann is one of the sketch faces in the Journal of Impossible Things. And so... That was a definite plus for fans of the 96 Fox movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it said, though, no, he is one of the doctors. And so that just tied it all together then.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want a copy of that book. Like, yeah. I don't want just, like, pictures of the images that are in it. I want to see the whole thing. I just want a replica of it.
Okay, well, if you follow the links on our site... through the Amazon affiliate.
They actually sell one of these?
They do sell it. I haven't seen it, like, in my hand. But there has been a Diary of Impossible Things listed with the Doctor Who stuff on Amazon for a while now.
I think it's just a replica of the journal, not necessarily the contents of it.
I want the contents too.
Well, if any of our listeners have bought this from Amazon, they can, you know, definitely call us up and say, "Nope, it's a fake.
It's a fake."
Yep, there we go. See, she hasn't watched that far yet.
Oh.
No, just whatever. Can you explain for the stupid and the other listeners?
You're the cabbage head in this episode.
Durr, durr, durr.
Yep.
Oh, no.
No, it's from DS9.
Mm-hmm.
That would be Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, thank you.
It's part of the Star Trek franchise created by Gene Roddenberry. This was the middle series.
Thanks, Wikipedia.
Yes. And you had Star Trek Next Generation, overlapped with Deep Space Nine, overlapped with Voyager.
Okay.
And so that is a huge plot point later in the seasons, and you'll have to watch and find out what it all means.
I've already lost track of what we're even talking about.
We were talking about the Journal of Impossible Things.
And one of our listeners.
The Amazon one does look like it's pretty.
I'm just shocked. Cold. This is probably like one of the few pieces of Doctor Who merchandise that we don't have in our house yet.
Right. I mean, I just picked up a new sonic screwdriver this week. Mm-hmm. With just a slight variation from the last sonic screwdriver.
And this and the Journal of Impossible Things comes with another sonic screwdriver.
Well, there you go.
Of course it does.
Well, how is she going to write in it? What?
I have no idea. I don't know anything anymore. Anyways.
So now the big thing that I also like, though, was when Dr. John Smith is talking to Joan and mentions his parents.
Yes. This was my favorite
Easter.
I didn't
catch this.
Okay, well, his mother was Verity, and his father was Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, the show, the first executive producer of Doctor Who, all the way back in 63, was Verity Lambert. And she was also one of the few, if not first, female producers of a television series.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sidney Newman is basically the creator, the driving force of getting Doctor Who on the air back in 63.
So the Doctor's parents were the actual creators of the show.
Yes, the people who made the show. So that was perfect. And then these names come up later in a way that we don't want to spoil.
Yes, there will be a quiz later.
Yes, so keep Sidney and Verity in mm-hmm. your thoughts, because that will come up later seasons. Keep them in your thoughts and prayers there, lads. And now, what is this you have about the Gallifreyan writing?
Oh, I think that this is the first time I really noticed any close-up shots of the Gallifreyan writing. It was all over the screen when he was doing the little video. Mm-hmm. I think there was like little notes.
He's got
and
yellow,
stuff.
The yellow post-it notes stuck to the monitor. Yeah. It's like you do at work when you take a note and stick mm-hmm. it up there, but it's written in Gallifreyan.
Yeah. So I kind of figured that this was like the first one where people are sitting there like doing screenshots so they could analyze it and try to break the code of what everything means.
And the watch, the whole design of the watch
on
the outside.
Yeah, the watch is covered with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think we have one of those yet either, do we?
The twins actually have.
Damn.
Yeah, I bought two of them. That won't happen again. Like $45 each, and I thought they were the cool. Jeez. No, the
you thought they were the metal ones.
I thought they were the
it's
metal
almost
ones.
It's impossible to tell the difference on Amazon, because sometimes the metal one's on sale for less than the plastic one.
Yeah, it's just a crapshoot, and I ended up with the plastic ones.
Ooh.
And I'm like, really? That I will say that is one of the few pieces of Doctor Who memorabilia that I was not happy with.
Mm-hmm.
Although Daniel told me that he needed a watch, and I was like, okay, I'll get you a watch. You know, I'll go get a Timex. Well, I was wanting a Doctor Who watch. I'm like, you're 11. It's 2015. You're about 100 years late for that whole pocket watch craze. But he still. I'm just
don't crush his dreams, Ben.
I'm going to use it to tell time. So okay, I get him the watch. Well, the watch has this fun thing that when you open it, it makes quotes from the show.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, okay, you know you can't use that at school.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way to turn the volume off.
Oh, my God.
And he's like,
that's horrible.
He's like, I won't open it at school. And then immediately dropped it. It pops open and it makes the noise.
And then the Time Lord memories seep out and the family finds him.
Well, he keeps it closed now.
Okay.
Yeah. Although I did notice that Rachel, his older sister, came in with the nose up. So that was a thing.
Hmm.
Now, moving on.
You know, I got to say, I think, and I hate to be like a one-trick pony here with hating on Rose, but watching this, I kept thinking, like, what would Rose do in this episode?
I was doing the same thing.
Thank you. Thank you. Because I felt like there were so many times that Martha was really good at adapting. Like, she took the housekeeper role. She didn't bitch and complain. Like, oh, I got to serve food to the kids in the cafeteria.
Rose would be like, I don't want to get my hands messy cleaning up
this.
Well, no,
she did that in school reunion. He made her the cafeteria
lady. And
she
complained about it. That's exactly what we're saying. She was like, oh, this is so horrible. This is like so beneath me. Oh my God. So Martha's down there scrubbing floors. She's making the best of the situation.
Martha is undercover. And it works.
She is. She's putting up with racism. She's putting up with a lot of shit.
That's only because she's from London. And they don't like Londoners in this episode. So Rose would have had the same problem.
No, she would have gotten all bitchy and smart mouth and probably started shit like
she would have gotten fired long before Martha.
Yes. Yeah.
She'd be like listening to her iPod and bopping around, not paying attention to the fact that it's 1913.
Wearing pants and a Union Jack t-shirt.
Yeah. Trying to like.
Which is frowned upon.
Yeah. I felt like there was a lot of times that Martha just acted on her own without needing the doctor to tell her what to do. And I felt like Rose did that a lot. Like she would just, she was very competent for the most part, like when he told her what to do. But I felt like Martha just did what she needed to do. You know, she's
a motivated self-starter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I've always liked Martha, is that, I mean, even before she found the doctor, she was, you know, training to be a doctor. Like, she was training to be someone, you know, a lifesaver, someone in charge of other people, and a leader. And it's just something that none of the other companions have. And that's why I've always liked Martha.
Mm-hmm.
That she is motivated and she is independent, except for the parts when she's like, oh, doctor. But I'd forgotten about that, honestly. But
I mean, there was definitely a lot of not Rose in this episode.
Mm-hmm. But I will say also that she, when she saw the doctor as John Smith falling in love with Joan Redfern, she didn't like try to sabotage it. And I almost kind of felt like Rose might have done something retarded to just like jump in and be like, you know, just get in their way like all the time, totally like, cock blocking them all the time.
Or do like silly, childish, you know, like a comedy of errors to like, you know, accidentally trip into him when they're making out. Oops, sorry.
Oh, I didn't mean to do
so. Basically, Rose would have turned this into a bad episode of Three's Company.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what we're saying. That's exactly what we're saying.
See, my thing is I can appreciate Martha without belittling Rose. The only Rose comparison I make is the fact that it was so blatant this season that Martha wasn't Rose.
Right. I think that's why it's hard to get past sometimes.
But Rose, well, definitely Rose and Martha are different people. Martha is one of my favorite companions. It doesn't make me like Rose less, but
it would be impossible for me to like Rose less.
All the hardships and trials that we've seen Martha go through this year, including this episode, is building up to, or is showing us that she is the person the doctor needs her to be, even when he doesn't know he needs her to be that person.
Yes.
And we see that come to a head soon.
We can't say anything else.
I know, but it's building.
I know! I know. But yeah.
Just hang on, Liam Neeson's. It all pays off soon.
But I mean, he even mentioned Rose a couple times. Like, it came up as they were looking through the book, and it was
and
like,
there's Rose.
Oh, that was, she was just some girl, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're not going to sit there. He's hitting on the nurse. He's not going to start be like, oh, yeah, she's this one London
got
bitch.
This young chick.
Man. She was crazy. I took her to Satan Pit. We totally boned.
I took her to watch her dad die for some reason.
Awesome first date. I highly recommend it.
She thought it was hot.
Talk about daddy issues. Oh.
Their first date was the destruction of the world. I mean, yeah. It's kind of...
Well, that's true.
End of the world.
Yeah. That's true.
Boom, laka.
So, speaking of Rose, this is a hard one for me to discuss without getting, like, way far ahead in the storyline, like, mm-hmm. two seasons away from now.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And I may have even said too much just then. Anyway. Shit.
Do we want to come back to this in two seasons?
Maybe.
We might have to have Drew come back. And so it'll be about 2020.
So in 20 years, yeah.
20 years,
when we get to those two seasons.
No, I think it was very striking to me also to see how the Doctor reacted to losing, or John Smith reacted to losing Joan Redfern,
mm-hmm.
and how clearly those two characters were in love,
mm-hmm.
versus when the Doctor lost Rose, like, he was kind of bummed out. Like, he was sad, but he was devastated in this episode. And I know it wasn't technically the Doctor, it was really John Smith,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like it was a good example of how I never really felt like the Doctor and Rose thing. I wasn't buying it as much as I was supposed to be as a viewer.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't getting like the chemistry when they separated at the end. It was like, okay, she's gone. Moving on.
You mentioned this before the show, and I was kind of agreeing with you, or thought I would be mm-hmm. agreeing with you. But now that I've been thinking about it and discussing the episode, I think one of the things that comes up is that the Doctor isn't the Doctor when he's so in love. He's human.
Right.
And so he isn't limited by something. Okay. Where, like, when the Doctor in school reunion, when Sarah Jane came back and Rose is having her little tantrum about not being the only one,
mm-hmm.
and that there were, you know, ladies before her in the TARDIS, and the Doctor said, I can't fall in love because if I do, that I'm just going to sit here and watch you get old and die.
Right.
I have to leave and move on. So right. he never lets himself, I mean, even if he does fall in love with one of the companions, I don't think he lets himself fully just go all in.
He is somewhat emotionally just limited.
I mean, because the Highlander effect, you have to be detached a little bit. Because, you know, Who Wants to Live Forever starts playing and Heather dies and everybody cries.
Yeah.
So Rose is going to die. Sarah Jane is going to die. And, you know.
You can't get attached.
You basically. Can't get too attached. I mean, it's like they're like the family Cocker Spaniel. You're sad when the dog dies.
Now you're calling Rose a dog. Okay.
You're the one who's always calling her a bitch.
100%.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying all the companions, though, are like Cocker Spaniels, right? And you can't get too attached.
He's learned to keep a slight distance, I guess.
Right. You know, it's a beloved pet, but at the end of the day,
yes,
you break out the peanut butter and you're going to go to jail.
I was with you up until the last part.
Okay.
But... point taken. Let's just move on.
Right. And see, John Smith, he could fall in love because he was human.
I kind of wonder if, like, he was almost somewhat repressed and, like, that's why he fell for this woman so completely and that quickly. I mean, obviously they had a good chemistry and they, mm-hmm. you know, they worked together, but it was just like, they knew each other for 2 months.
So all that pent-up love and lust...
desire to have emotions
and have somebody in his life, that permanence just really magnified because mm-hmm. he couldn't have it as the Doctor.
Like if the Doctor was half human, like he was supposedly.
That was just a good. Okay. We'll just cut that part out, Drew, because we don't talk about that on show. Red cabbage.
Let's say that he was half human. Like if this was a Spock, this was a show about Spock, and like he had to hide his Vulcan side, and so he's all human, and so it's like this is his human half coming out and falling mm-hmm. in love and so forth. So I'm wondering if that's kind of what they were playing with here, like the Doctor without him being a Time Lord would be this sappy, lovey, maybe kind of thing, or that this is all of his repressed.
Well, at the same time, though, there wasn't too much of the Doctor popping out because he had no problem with, yeah, Latimer messed up. Permission to beat him, sir. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Like, oh, yeah. Oops.
So he's definitely a man of his time. Yeah. And then when Not Rose slaps him, you know, trying to knock some sense into him, and he's like, just completely flabbergasted. And can you believe the cheek on her? I mean, what the? So, you know, in one way, yeah, I think there was some of the Doctor coming out, but I think for the greater extent, this was John Smith, human John Smith from Sherwood or
Nottingham, I think.
Okay, I knew it was some Robin Hood thing.
Yes. And I thought it was really brave of Joan to decline the offer to go with the Doctor. Mm-hmm. Because even though she doesn't really have, I mean, she has the job there at the school. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, she had a husband that she lost in the war.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't seem to have much other family or much other stuff going on. She could have easily just said, yeah, I'll go with you. You look just like John Smith that I was in love with. But she turned it down.
Well, and I like what she said, though. She couldn't stand to look at him because he looks like John Smith, but he's not John Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the Doctor says, well, the stuff that, you know, the John Smith stuff is still in there.
Right.
But he's not John Smith. He's not the John Smith that she fell in love with. So now the person that you were falling in love with so deeply is dead, and now here's this other guy who sounds kind of like him and looks exactly like him. Could you
like
bear
a ghost?
Yeah. Could you bear, I mean, doing that? I got to think it's happening because people, you know, have twins.
And I would think she may have also even realized that he wouldn't be able to fall for her in the same way, but she might still have that, like, residual feeling for him and, like, not be able to let go.
The final question, though, that she had for him was that, you know, would any of these people died if you just hadn't on a whim chosen to come to hide here?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's deep. That's where, yeah, you know, now if the companions are Cocker Spaniels, the rest of us are like gerbils or maybe guinea pigs. You know, that's a lower order of pet. Hey, a few people are going to die, but the majority of them, you know, and he gets to pick who's the cannon fodder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the majority will be fine.
Senses that the Doctor is he is like the bringer of death. I mean, even if he's not directly responsible for it, which he usually isn't.
You know, when you hear that sound of the TARDIS, you know, death and chaos follow.
Which is what a lot of characters have said in some way or another, like, you know, in all three seasons up to this point.
Yeah.
So,
and pretty much that is the common theme throughout New Who. Beware the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of scary that he's getting that kind of reputation too.
It's crazy how much stuff in this episode, for being a one-off episode, ties in with other things.
Well, yeah, one-off episodes.
Well, yeah, okay. But it's like a set, you know, it's two-part special. But it wasn't part of the story arc this season, but it had things that tie in with it, and there are things that kind of come back up here and there, and just little things that kind of tie it in with the rest of the, you know, the rest of the story. And some, like, just really iconic stuff, like the fire and ice and rage, you know, that whole thing. I love this episode.
Yeah, me too.
I've totally, like, flipped on this one because I was just kind of like, you know, it's just okay. Like, I've always felt like it was overhyped, but I'm 100% on board with this episode now.
Okay.
Love it.
So, Drew, what are your final thoughts on this episode?
Like I said earlier, I just had that ending in my mind, and I'd forgotten a lot of the details up to that point, but even the details, I was like, oh yeah, this is the one where he became human. Oh, but really it watching it again, it turns out that is really good for the character and for the show. And I think that it's, it's amazing. It's been a long time since I've seen most of the other episodes, so I can't like rank it.
Mm-hmm.
But I really love it. I really love it.
Yeah, that's, I think that's going to be the consensus, that this is definitely an episode that I couldn't point people to this episode to get them started on Doctor Who.
No, no.
But I think if they were having doubts about Tennant, I might go ahead and skip them ahead to this episode.
I don't think so, because I think you really need to get the character of the Doctor as he is normally to understand how different he is as a human and to see that difference.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because my wife was watching a lot of the episode with me and she's not watched Doctor Who.
Okay.
And I was kind of getting that idea, thinking that to myself, like, you know, she's not really getting an idea of the actual show because she doesn't know the Doctor to know that this is not normal.
Right. Right. I mean, she might. I mean, it's like the first episode of Star Trek I ever saw was Assignment Earth. The Gary 7 episode. Okay.
The backdoor pilot. That makes sense.
Exactly. So maybe I'm not a Star Trek fan all these years. Maybe I'm, you know, a Gary 7 fan. Right. And so, and we always point people toward an upcoming episode.
Yes.
The next episode.
The next episode, yeah, that we'll be talking about next time, that, you know, that's the go-to episode, but it is very little Doctor in it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you point them toward this episode, which is one of the best episodes with the Doctor in it,
it just doesn't make sense.
He's not really the Doctor in this episode. Right. So,
well, it's so character-driven that you just, you need all of that build-up to get, yeah, to get to this point.
And plus, though, this was such a, yeah, you wouldn't get the dynamic between Martha and the Doctor unless you've, mm-hmm, seen this whole year of her being not Rose. And you wouldn't understand why she was not Rose unless you'd watched the previous season of Tennant and Rose.
I would actually kind of disagree with you on that. I think that's the only thing that would probably be improved, is that if you didn't have all that, like, oh god, it's that again, the whole Martha's in love with the Doctor, mm-hmm, you know, it almost would seem like, I think, this big revelation when she's like, okay, you won't remember this later, but I love you, and blah blah blah, blah, you know, confessing all this.
Yeah.
I think that part would actually be a little bit better for me if it hadn't been beaten into you like the rest of the season.
Well, see, I think, though, that's maybe one of the things that makes Rose so popular is that so many people, or that makes Martha so popular,
oh,
is that so many people have been either in Mickey or Martha's position.
Of the unrequited love.
Yeah, where you had that crush in high school or in college or wherever. Right. And, mm-hmm, they're so, you know, you've got that friend that you could totally crush on, but
friend zone,
that they're, you know, still hung up on their ex.
Uh huh.
And you're just like, you know, you're the friend that they're just sitting there going, oh, if I could just meet somebody like you. And you're like, what the hell? I'm right here. Yeah. I am just like me.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm just bringing something to it from high school. I don't know.
That couldn't be it at all.
No.
No. Anyway.
Anyway. Definitely want to thank you, Drew, for, you know, hanging around and waiting for us to come back for you.
I've just been standing here waiting for to hear the TARDIS, and it's been so long.
For a year and a half.
You know, I now I'm starting to think of Drew as becoming our Sarah Jane.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, you drop me, you know, between Drew and Dennis.
The Drew who waited.
You didn't even leave me a tin dog.
How about I send you a can of soup? That's kind of the same thing, right?
It's close.
Tin can,
tin dog. It's you know, we'll get send him one of the Warhols. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
All right. So, Drew, thank you. But tell us where folks can find you online, or is there anything else you want to plug?
Well, they can find me on Trek FM, where I do Standard Orbit with Mike Schindler. And they can find me on various other shows, usually Mike's other show, Commentary Track Stars. I've been on a few times on there recently. And you can find me on Twitter at 005, all spelled out, DOUBLEOFIVE.
All right. And we've got most of that. That'll all be in the show notes with, yeah, links to everything. Definitely want to thank our friend Daryl Lewis
for making our awesome theme song.
Right.
And he'll actually be on next week.
Oh, that's cool. So I'll ask him if he can make us a new one.
Just right on the spot?
Yes.
Come up with a new one?
Just make up something new. It'll be great.
All right, so you can find us on the interwebs at playingdoctorpodcast.com.
We're on Facebook / Playing Doctor.
You got us on Twitter at Playing Doctors.
We're on Google Plus. Just look it up.
Right. All this is linked on the webpage. You can find us on iTunes, Stitchers. Follow the links from the homepage and find everything that we do.
Be sure to subscribe, comment, leave us ratings, reviews, and all that good shit so that we can make fun of you if you don't like us.
Which we routinely do now.
Yeah.
And if you have any thoughts on this episode, upcoming episodes, or the new season will be starting soon, and Spoilers comes back.
Yes.
So if you want to talk about that, call our Playing Doctor feedback line, which is at 434-993-TIME.
That's 434-993-8463 if you're a sad bastard that still has a BlackBerry with no letters on it.
Which is me. we may play your message in an upcoming episode, so if you record something, it's ours to make fun of.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm Reality Amok on Twitter.
And I'm Jenny _Z, and I'm also on MouthyBroadcast.com.
And we'll see everyone later. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Making everything plural.